James 3. I don't know if you remember this. When I did the overview to James, I quoted this. James is the least doctrinal, most practical book in the New Testament. That's always sort of nice to see when you're going to read something, isn't it? I reckon that James 3 is the most practical chapter in the most practical book in the New Testament. I think it's just absolutely great. I did a Wordle on this. A Wordle is a little software program that you can put any block of text into, and it sorts it out, and the words that are repeated most get put in the largest typing, so that means you can get an immediate view of what the thing is about. As you can see, the word tongue is very strong there, we already know that, and fire and brothers and sisters and wisdom and selfish and ambition and things like that. So it gives you an idea of what the whole chapter is about. I just want to say a couple of things. When James talks about the tongue, it's not the first time he's talked about this kind of a topic. It went in James. If you remember James 1, you must understand this, my beloved, let everyone be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger, for your anger does not produce God's righteousness. Righteousness is living in a right relationship with God. If any think they are religious, spiritual would probably be a better word. If any think they are religious and do not bridle their tongues but deceive their hearts, their religion is worthless. If you can't bridle your tongue, your spiritual life is worthless, says James. Heavy stuff. We need to be in control of our tongues, and that's probably the principal message of the chapter. He starts off by addressing teachers. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. Some commentators think that the whole passage is actually addressed to teachers or to people with positions of authority in the church, but I think there's, whether that's true or not, and there is argument over it, there is certainly messages for everybody in this particular passage. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers and sisters. You know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For all of us make many mistakes. Oh, this is where I come in. Anyone who makes no mistakes in speaking is perfect, able to keep the whole body in check with a bridle. If we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we guide their whole beings, bodies. Or look at ships, though they are so large that it takes strong winds to drive them, yet they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great exploits. That bit there, boasts of great exploits, is actually, he's referring to a psalm. And I'm going to put the psalm up because it fills in a bit this. Explain that, where it says... It says it boasts of great exploits just there. Can you imagine that being in inverted commas? When I think it was Elkin's contribution, she was talking about politicians, when little catchphrases they had, like life wasn't meant to be easy. When I was thinking about this, I was actually thinking about John Howard and relaxed and comfortable. You know, I'm relaxed and comfortable with this. So when an Australian says to another Australian, I'm relaxed and comfortable, they're saying more than just those words. They're saying, you know, here's a little joke. This is what John Howard used to say, you know, that what he's actually doing when he says, yet it boasts of great exploits. It looks odd to us when it's written like that, but it's actually a quote from a psalm, and the people who were reading this would almost certainly have known that. This is the psalm, or part of the psalm. Help, O Lord, for there is no longer anyone who is godly. The faithful have disappeared from humankind. They utter lies to each other with flattering lips, and a double heart they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips, the tongue that makes great boasts. There it is. Those who say, with our tongues we will prevail, our lips are our own. Who is our master? So you can see how that fits in with the whole meaning of James 3. Still, James goes back to the tongue. And he really starts rolling his sleeves up. How great a forest is set ablaze by a small fire, and the tongue is a fire. The tongue is placed among our members as a world of iniquity. It stains the whole body. It sets on fire the cycle of nature and is itself set on fire by hell. He's getting a bit strong here, isn't he? Yes. It is strong stuff. And I personally, I'm starting to feel a bit sorry for the tongue. I think the tongue's getting a bit of a bad rap here because the tongue doesn't actually do this stuff. This stuff comes from the brain, or it comes from the heart, is where the damage is done. When Jesus was talking, I'm going to read something that Jesus said rather than put it up, because otherwise I'll get confused, let alone anyone else. Listen to me, all of you, and understand there is nothing outside a person that by going into them can defile them. The things that come out are what defile. The context of Jesus saying this is that people have been talking about food that they eat, which makes them unclean. And Jesus is saying there is no food that makes you unclean. He goes on, the disciples came to him when he said this and said, "We didn't get that. Could you go through it again, please?" He said, "Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from the outside cannot defile them, since it enters not the heart but the stomach and then goes out into the sewer?" He really did say that. A lot of versions of the Bible don't have that in there, but that's what he actually said. We might say dunny. He said it's what comes out of a person that defiles. It's from within, from the human heart, that evil intentions come. All evil things come from within, and they defile a person. They defile a person. Yep, that's fair enough. Okay. My mistake, but it's reasonable. So it's not the tongue's fault, it's what goes on in our heart. But James carries on having a go at the tongue. Just bear with him for a while and we'll get to some good stuff. Every species of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by the human species. But no one can tame the tongue, a restless evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we curse those who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so. There's an important point here. The word curse is very strong in our language. To curse someone it means to be really very nasty to them. Not quite right for this particular word. This particular word means condemnation. It would be better to translate it, probably, there are arguments over this, but it would probably be better to talk about condemning rather than cursing. With it we bless the Lord and Father, and with it we condemn those who are made in the likeness of God. We're all made in the likeness of God. So is James actually saying that we should not condemn other people? Yes, he is saying that. And he said that because Jesus said it, and said it very, very clearly. It means we should not put other people down. We should not run other people down. And it happens among Christians a lot. I'm seeing it all the time. And so, of course, sometimes I hear myself doing it. We were having a session, a small group of us with one of the tutors who were doing some graduate stuff the other day, and someone started weighing into another denomination. And I have to say, what they were saying I agreed with, you know. And of course they were right. But there's a question there. Can we condemn any other Christian? The way we eventually worked it out in this seminar, there are only about five of us there with the tutor, was supposing Jesus walked into Vaux, or supposing Jesus walked into MHCC, or supposing Jesus walked into any group of Christians, would he say, "Guys, you're doing a terrific job, couldn't be better"? No, he wouldn't, not in any circumstances. Therefore, we do not have the right to criticise other people. And when I say Christians, I mean all Christians. And when I say all Christians, I'm actually including lots of... When I was a lad, the idea that Roman Catholics were Christians was an absolute no-no. You know, these days, we are much more accepting. We invite them to come and speak here, and we regard people like Henri Nouwen and Richard Rohr as spiritual guides. But when I was a lad, Roman Catholics weren't Christians. God had turned his back on Roman Catholics completely, as far as the church that I was being brought up in was concerned. Yep. Is everyone? Yes, absolutely. Yes, yeah. It's part of it. Yes, yeah. But when I was writing this, I just started thinking about the way we talk about other Christians. I'm probably getting back to Jesus' teachings about you should love others. What about the J-Dubs? They're made in the likeness of God. Yes, they are. They are. Yeah. It's an interesting question. I'm not suggesting there's any absolute answers to it. But one thing I would suggest is that we do not criticise others, including the J-Dubs, including, who are the others? Mormons. What? Mormons. Mormons, exactly, yeah. We do not criticise them. Unless it's actually really important that we do so. You know, if a group of people, if a group of Christians are doing something which is, or individual Christians are doing something which is clearly letting the side down, you know, and is really, really important stuff, then maybe it's our job to do so. But I think we very often criticise others, and because it makes us feel better. You know, it makes us feel, yeah, okay, I make a few mistakes, but I'm not as bad as them. You know, this is not what it's all about. My brothers and sisters, this ought not to be so. The same mouth with which we bless the Lord and Father should not be the same mouth with which we put down other people. Doesn't matter who they are. Yes, okay. James goes on. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and brackish water? Can a fig tree, my brothers and sisters, yield olives, or a grapevine figs? No more can salt water yield fresh. Does this sound like Jesus talking? It's very, very similar. Jesus said, beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Are grapes gathered from thorns or figs from thistles? In the same way, every good tree bears good fruit, but the bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. On this same topic, of course, Jesus said something which we actually have in our constitution under the heading of conflict resolution. Jesus said, if you've got a problem with another person in your church, you go, first of all, and you talk to that person about it. That's what he said. And if you can't get the result that you want, then you find someone else, one other person. This is the first occasion when you talk to somebody else about whatever the problem is. You take that other person and you go with them and you talk to the person again. And what happens when the first thing, if somebody offends you, the first thing you do is you talk to a third party about it, is you start getting factionalism. And factionalism is not what you want in a church of that follows the teachings of Jesus. And one of the things I love about this church is if there is factionalism here, I haven't noticed it. Maybe I just haven't been invited to join a faction. No, sorry. That is how we avoid having factions, which it comes down to treating other people with love and respect. You know, if you've got a problem with someone, you go and talk to them. You certainly go and talk to them before you talk to anybody else. Actually getting towards the end now, which is fine. Good timing. At this point, James seems to change tack. The young people, when they were looking through this passage, say, well, what's happened here? He's been doing all this stuff about the tongue, and now suddenly he's talking about something else. I think that board shows that he actually isn't talking about something else. He's actually continuing on the same theme. But this is just a guy writing a letter, you know, and in those days you didn't have the option of typing away and then thinking, no, I could have phrased that better, and going back. You know, the stuff you were using was really important. So Paul does it all the time. He's talking about one thing and then he goes off on another thing and he comes back to another thing, and we just have his letters like that. We have to read the letters like that. But I think in this instance, that's not what he's doing. He's actually just continuing with a very sensible, wise of thought. Who is wise and understanding among you? Show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness born of wisdom. He's saying show by your deeds, which of course is what James is always on about, what your good life is like. And part of your good deeds must be the way you talk to other people. Understanding here, where's the word? That word doesn't mean the way we usually word understanding. A person who is understanding is sympathetic or empathic. It means, I've got it written down what it means, hang on a minute. It means knowing, it means knowledge. So having understanding means like wisdom, knowledge, that kind of thing. So who is wise and understanding among you? Show by your good life that your works are done with gentleness, born of wisdom. If you think you are wise, if you think you're understanding, it will show. But, there's a but coming. But if you have bitter envy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not be boastful and false to the truth. Such wisdom does not come down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, devilish. For where there is envy and selfish ambition, there will also be disorder and wickedness of every kind. This is back to Jesus' teaching about what's in the heart. He even says, in your hearts, there at the top. And finally, there's some good news. James has given us a good lecture on what how things go wrong, and he just gets completely positive at the end. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. I'll read that again. The wisdom from above, God's wisdom, is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without a trace of partiality or hypocrisy. Gives us all something to aim at, doesn't it? And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace for those who make peace. The echoes of 1 Corinthians 13 there. You know, in that first of those two paragraphs of the of what our love for each other should be all about. Any thoughts? Michael? Do you want to? Oh, it's gone.
I think what I like about the about this chapter is, as you say, it finishes off with describing wisdom from above, gives us something to aim for, but also in banging on about the tongue, he gives us a starting point. Jesus talks about a lot about the heart, getting your heart in the right place. And sometimes it can be a bit overwhelming. Yeah, well, my heart's far from that. Where am I going to go from here? James is dealing with that by going, well, here's a starting point. Even if your heart's not in the right place, get your tongue in the right place. Mm. And you get a better idea of what your heart being in the right place might look like.
Yep.
He gives us a place to start, and he gives us something to aim for as well.
Yeah, yeah. Phil, I really love what you said there. You know, what is wisdom? Sometimes it's not doing anything and not saying anything. In my collection of quotes, I've got one which says, nothing is often a very good thing to do and usually a very good thing to say. It is so true. Paul? Ken.
That leads me to, for some reason, what popped up as you were talking was Jesus tells us, or tells me anyway, that when I have successfully isolated the person I can call an enemy, that's the person I aim my love at.
Mm.
And undoes me in terms of, you know, my plotting that I am justifiably going to make that person my enemy. Well, that's a good deal.
Yeah.